Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Glad to have you with us. I'm Cassidy, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Divs.
Hey guys.
This week, we are continuing our foray into the legend of Vox Machina.
Oh
So
yeah.
last week, we covered episodes 1 to 3 on the podcast, and this week, we're covering episodes 4 to 6 because there's so much going on. And honestly, I mean, I can't speak for anybody else, but for myself alone, I can probably talk about it for eternity because I loved it. There's so much cool stuff going on.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's a pretty, in my opinion, pretty epic tale.
It
And
is.
I think we both really enjoyed watching it. So between the two of us, we could probably talk about it for hours on end, which is part of
Yeah.
the reason we decided to split this into multiple segments.
I think we kind of
But
had
also,
to.
yeah, there's a lot going on. There's so many cool things and epic things, and it's a really like jam-packed season. So we thought we would do multiple episodes of our
Yes.
podcast because the show itself had so much going on and there's a
Yeah.
lot of cool stuff to get into. So we're going to get into as much as we can, but before we do, just our usual spoiler warning slash disclaimer. The show has been out for some time now, and season one I think came out in 2020 or 2021, I can't remember
It's been a
when.
while.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it's been out for a bit. But if you are not familiar with either campaign one of Critical Role and or season one of the show, just be warned, we're getting into spoiler territory. And as
Yes.
always, listener discretion is advised for anybody who is not familiar with the source material. But for those who are, if you've stuck around this long to listen to us rant and rave about this show, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. We say it all the time, but it's always, always true because
Oh
it
God,
means the world to
yes.
us that anybody is listening to anything that we put out.
No, I absolutely agree. It is absolute it's really Yeah, we cannot say this enough. We really appreciate you guys for giving us a listen. And with that, I don't let's talk about where we left these guys off, because I think we were talking about this in the first episode where in the first episode for this of the Vox Machina stuff, where we were saying that while we start this show with this group when the once they're already banded together and don't know much about their backstories, and this is when they start diving into their backstories, right? Because now we have something personal to Percy coming up, right? Because he sees the whites, he sees the Briarwoods. I'm sorry, I was gonna say Whitestones, and I was like, no, Whitestone's the place. But anyway, so he sees the Briarwoods, and he gets triggered by it, of course, because they're the reason why he has no family, and he almost, and they're the reason he almost died. They're the reason his home is no longer his home, and that's kind of a shocker, because not only did investigating them put Vox Machina as a group at odds with the council at Tal'Dorei, it also alerted Silas and Delilah to the fact that Percy is alive and that they have to do something about that as well. So I want to talk about that and how this sets up the rest of the season, because it really does. So let's get into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big event, really, like the Briarwoods showing up at a feast and just existing in, I guess, I want to say kind of like the open with all these other residents, and especially like high-ranking council members in Amon and from around the world, and just being there without really like disguising or hiding, I guess, their intent. And I think they're able to do that partly because Silas does have some ability to manipulate people and kind of control them. And so they don't really necessarily have to hide. They can just be out in the open, just do their thing. And then anytime things get dicey, all Silas has to do is just look a certain way at somebody and just use his powers or his abilities. And that's enough. And so we did see a little bit of that in episode three with Silas kind of controlling slash manipulating Uriel and obviously Vox Machina know that something is kind of weird and off about them because Percy's kind of hinted as much, maybe not in so many words, but through his actions and his behavior. And so they're on alert. And then especially at the end of episode three with the fight with the Briarwoods, they know what's going on. They know that the Briarwoods are definitely up to something, and they're also the type of couple, or like the type of people that just like put out really sinister vibes, I would imagine. So it's not surprising that they would pick up on it, but it is kind of interesting that because Silas has this ability to control or manipulate people or whatever you want to call it, Uriel is just kind of doing some of the work for Silas to help the Briar achieve what they want to achieve. And because Uriel is the leader or the sovereign, everybody else on the council just has to go along with it. So when we start episode four, we just find Vox Machina basically under house arrest, which is a deal. For them. And I mean, they succeeded in getting Delilah's creepy book, which is like kind of, I guess, her, I don't want to say like it lists all her plans, but it has a lot of important
A
stuff in it, which,
major chunk.
yeah, so at least they have that. But then it's like they can't do anything about the Briarwoods because they're on house arrest with guards just constantly monitoring them. And they're told explicitly that if you do anything, we're going to kill you like on site.
We'll take you out.
Yeah. So going into episode four, it's like, okay, great. They got the thing that they needed to get, but now they can't take any other action because they're on house arrest. And I mean, their keep is fairly large, and they have like the entire run of it, but it's still house arrest. And it's like there's seven of them. Like they're going to go stir crazy eventually. And it
That's
probably
true.
won't end well for the guards.
Definitely not. That's exactly where we find them. You're absolutely right. So, basically, and Delilah and Silas are basically they've just discovered that they left this book behind, and that's not good because and Delilah knows that she has all her major plans outlined in that book, and some of her spells are in that book, and if someone discovers that, that's gonna be the end of them and their and end of their reign at Whitestone, basically. So that's exactly why this episode is so interesting, because what she does is send she tries to send the undead after Vox Machina to basically get the book back, right? And that fight is really cool and interesting. I want to talk about that because you mentioned something in our notes for this when we were talking about this, which I really appreciate because Keyleth is again, I love Keyleth. She has, for all effects and purposes, the powers of the Avatar. Right? So she's she has confidence issues. So let's talk about that and how that pans out and how creepy that whole sequence was, because it was creepy. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I can definitely see why people might find it creepy. I just thought it was really interesting that I think a lot of this episode for, I think both parties, like both Vox Machina and the Briarwoods, was like testing each other's limits and or capabilities, because I think Delilah obviously knew, I think that she, and I don't think she had any hesitation or there was any sort of like doubt in her mind that she could take on Vox Machina and win. But for, you know, the rest of them, I don't know that they, I mean, like Percy probably knew what the Briarwoods were capable of, but the rest of the party obviously didn't, and they were kind of dealing with them for the first time in episode three. So going into episode four, you know, the Briarwoods are back in Whitestone, Vox Machina is still in their keep in Amon, and they're separated by a fairly large distance. And so you would assume that Delilah would have no sort of power or ability to do what she needs
Get
to
to
do,
them,
right? But because of her arts or her gifts or whatever you want to call it, like you said, she's able
Necromancy,
to
basically.
basically, yeah, I mean, she's able to send like some sort of weird, creepy spectral shade type thingy after Vox
Yeah,
Machina. And
gooey shaped undead thingies, whatever you want to call them. But yeah.
yeah, I was also just really interesting that, like, I think, or I mean, this may have been partially because it was adapting events from campaign one into a more condensed format for the show. And I think we mentioned this in our last episode, but neither of us have seen campaign one. I'm familiar with some stuff, but I haven't really seen it. So I don't know if this is something that they went through in the actual campaign. But in this, I thought it was really interesting that in the show, it's like, Delilah kind of skips, I guess, some of like the lower stuff in terms of like tests for Vox Machina. She just
goes straight to
like Creepy Shades. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that was something, because like the thing with the streams is that there's hundreds of episodes and each episode is several hours long.
For sure.
Yeah, and you know, you can go through fairly detailed fights in as little or as much time as you want. I don't know if they did anything in the stream because I'm not super familiar with it. Like, I know that I'm sure there was some back and forth in terms of fights with the Briarwoods in the stream. I just don't know if when Delilah was testing Vox Machina, if she sent maybe like some easy stuff to deal with at first, and then the more like Vox Machina defeated, the more like, or like the larger or scarier her minions got. I don't know if any of that made sense, but I just thought it was interesting to see that, like, as soon as she realizes she's lost the book, she goes straight to like, okay, screw it, we're not wasting time with like low level things that could potentially you know, like give Vox Machina a hard time. We're just gonna go straight to something that might be really difficult for them to defeat so that I can get my book back. And so like I appreciated that, but like I said, I don't know if there was something in the stream where it was like a series of things that she sent after them, or if it was just like she went straight to creepy ghosts.
That's always something that I want to go back to now, like, considering that now that I've watched the show, watching the stream be like, oh, this is how that happened kind of thing, you know, like it, because I really find it fascinating that these stories happen on the fly and there's a lot of improvisation going on while they're doing this, which is like super cool because, like you said, it happens on the fly in these streams and you're like, oh my god, what the hell just happened kind of thing. But it, even in the show, it's to condense that into the show, it's pretty cool. I really find that super interesting. I really agree. But there are a couple of things here that are really interesting because Pike is struggling with her connection to the Everlight. She's struggling with her magic. And she thinks it's because Delilah struck her before they left for Whitestone. And she thinks that whatever she did has severed her connection to the Everlight. And this fight proves that, in the sense that Pike is constantly struggling to hold her own, whereas normally she would have no trouble with these kinds of things. And then there's Keyleth, who still hasn't unlocked her full potential, I have to say. I wanted to let's talk about that, because again, this is why I think this show is pretty unique in exploring these characters as a group and then also as individuals. So that's why I kind of find that's why I kind of didn't feel like, oh my god, I don't know enough about these characters to care about them, because you end up caring about them a lot. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got a little bit of like Percy's backstory both in the last episode, and then in episode four, you get some more insight into his connection with the Briarwoods and his dealings with them and all of that. And with Pike, as the show progresses, you get more and more insight. But yeah, in this episode, like you said, she is kind of struggling with her connection to the Everlight, because I don't know. I mean, at least since the show started, that like the whole group has just been through so much. There hasn't really been a moment for them to kind of pause and like be introspective or like reflect on really anything. They've just been going from like one crazy thing to the next crazy thing to the next crazy thing, and there really hasn't been a moment's rest. And so, like when they're on house arrest, it's really the first time that they're given any sort of time to just like exist and just like do things that I guess they wouldn't have had time for, that they just didn't think about previously. But it's also like, they're kind of, I think, a little bit on pins and needles because they know now what the Briarwoods are, what they're capable of, and they might not know specifically what the Briarwoods are doing yet, but they know that whatever it is, it's not great, it's not good, and they need to be stopped. And I think, especially in this episode, when they have time to just like sit around and not do much and just kind of plan and I guess prepare, I think it's really interesting to see like the differences, I think, between how characters like Pike and Keyleth kind of work on themselves, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Because Pike is very like, she knows she like something's wrong and she thinks it's like if it's just a matter of her connection being severed, kind of like Grog suggests, maybe all she has to do is apologize or like be more
vocal about about talking to the Everlight and reestablishing her connection to the Everlight, basically. Yeah. Because to them, the Everlight is a deity. Like, basically, that's what it is. That's what that is to them. And yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. And then, like, you have Keyleth on the opposite end of the spectrum, who's like not really focusing on what she can and can't do. And she's just like, I mean, I don't want to say she doesn't focus on it, but I think there is like, it's really interesting to see, because I think I would say, like, arguably, Pike and Keyleth are probably the most powerful members of the group.
Oh God, yes, but, yeah.
Like, for somebody who's so powerful, who can like control all the elements and turn into like different animals with her wild shape or beast shape or whatever it's called, Keyleth doesn't use her powers that often, and I think part of it is maybe because she is a little bit hesitant, or I guess doubtful of like what she can do. I don't know if it's a correct assessment, but
no, but I close
some sense of that. But I just thought it was really interesting because in this episode, when they're on house arrest, Pike is obviously trying to reestablish her connection to the Everlight, and she's trying to do everything she can to like get
that spark back.
And and then Keyleth is just kind of like, I don't think she wants to fully embrace her
what she
abilities.
Is capable of.
And I think, like, I know some stuff from the stream, so I think I might know why. I don't know how the show is going to adapt that, because in the actual campaign, I think it ends up being that there's a kind of, I guess, fairly big like subplot, I think, regarding her and what happens when she completes her Armente and all of that. And I think it's all related. But it was really interesting to see, like, there's a bit where the team gets split up and they're put in separate rooms because the guards are like, you can't be trusted to be together.
Yeah.
And we
because
get
they try to get
intense.
Out. There's a reason for that, because they try to get out and they almost succeed, but then they get caught and that's like, yeah, we can't trust you to stay in one room, so you'll obviously do this again, so bye.
But like, when that happens, we get like a brief bit of insight into like Keyleth's backstory, or like, I guess, a portion of it, because she's on this journey to finish her Armente, and she technically can't return home until she does. But I thought it was really sweet and wholesome that, because she and Percy are like kind of locked up together, she's like telling him, even though you think you're alone and you think nobody understands what you're going through, you're not alone, and we're all here for you. And I thought that was really sweet, because I think in the actual campaign, from what little I remember of it, I think there was like a real like sibling sort of vibe between them, if that makes any
which
sense. Like, they're
really
not actually
sweet.
Related, but
I get that. I mean, they're idiots, but sure. See, this is why I love this group, because yes, absolutely, because they seem like, because in the first episode, Keyleth's like, why are we even working together? But then there's stuff like this where you can where you can actually see that they genuinely care about each other. And it's just, I love how everyone is all in to help Percy get back what he lost, even if that means, you know, it doesn't align with what everyone wants, but this is what Percy has been dealing with for like years now, and now they're like all in. Yeah, we have to deal with this, and not only and not and of course doing this will clear our name, but look at per but it'll at least help Percy as well. So I really like that. I'm sorry, I keep saying
Yeah,
Percy because I keep thinking of Percy Jackson because I that's just anyway.
No, it's I think especially if you're into that, there's not a lot of characters in media that are named Percy. Or if there are, I'm only familiar with Percy Jackson and Percy Derulo. I don't know a ton of others, but it's easy
I
to
know.
kind of confuse the two. But yeah, I mean, I think also it's just like really nice to see that. I mean, I think Vex is the one who makes the point that like initially she's like kind of ragging Percy and telling him like you owe us an explanation. And he's like, I didn't know I had to like divulge my whole history. And she's like, well, when your history comes back to kill us, then I think like
Good
we deserve
point.
to know. But it was nice to see that even though they all kind of got thrown into this a little bit, they were like, you know what, it's like we don't mind helping. And like honestly at this point they were kind of they knew too much, I think, to just walk away. And I think even if as a group they decided, okay, you know what, screw this, we're not gonna do anything with the Briarwoods, we're not gonna like fight them, or we're just gonna leave them be, I think Delilah at least would have been like absolutely not. And I think she would have viewed them as a loose end. So I think regardless of the outcome, they probably would have ended up having to fight the Briarwoods. But it is nice to see that they were like, okay, if it's Percy's problem, it's our problem.
I love
And
that.
yeah, there's also a bit where like when initially when they're all separated, Vax and Vex end up together, and Vex makes a point of saying like, you know, we could leave all this behind us and we could run away, and you know the guards might catch the rest of the group but they won't catch us. And then Vax like is like, okay, great, but why aren't we doing that then? And I think I don't know if they thought about it until that point, so it's interesting to kind of see them have that conversation too of
I
like
have a theory, but we'll get to that later. They're idiots, but we'll get to that later because
I
Vax,
think I know your theory.
I know you and I have that theory. I know. You know what? It's fine. It's fine. We'll get to that. But during the course of this, the guards finally realize that something's not right about this, about these undead creatures coming to get them for some reason. And like, why? And that's when they're like, okay, especially the leader of these guards, he's like, get the people who took my men from me, and then yeah, you have to deal with this. So in the end, after qu quite an epic showdown with these zombie thingies, they're able to leave. And the first stop they make is at Gilmore. So I want to talk about that because that's kind of funny too.
Yeah, I mean, one, just as a quick, like, just to go back, like, one second, I just want to say how badass their fight was against those, like, ghosts or zombies or whatever you want to call them. Like, I mean, there's a lot going on in that fight,
There's a lot.
but there were so many things I loved, like, Vex just being a complete badass, Keyleth turning into, like, a little bunny with antlers, that was, which, like,
Yes.
that was really, really
Really cool.
cute. And then yeah, just like the way they defeat the shades too, or whatever they're called. I apologize, I don't know the proper term, but I've been calling them shades for lack of a better term. But I don't know, I just thought it was really cool that like initially it like the way they the scene was framed, or like the way there was all the setup, I thought it was gonna be like, okay, Keyleth and or Pike is going to produce some light and they're just going to use it to like defeat the things, but it's like no, Keyleth literally just lights up the whole place and then everybody just goes like crazy and just bashes a bunch of zombie skulls, and it was the coolest thing and also just really, really funny
It
to
was.
watch. But yeah, so episode 5 is when they are given kind of the all clear by Jarrett, or I guess the go ahead to just like go take care of them.
Exactly. So that's why I find it really interesting because, again, the guards are basically like, you know what, something's not right about this. We have to find out what's going on. And Uriel's being weird. So let's just deal with this kind of thing. So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, their like first, I guess, run through Gilmore's post the Briarwood encounter was just really interesting and really cool and funny to see, because I think they don't have time to stop and wait for the shop to open up and to like talk with Gilmore.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it's probably Vex and Vax who make the decision that we're just gonna go in, take some stuff, maybe leave an IOU and just get out of town as fast as we can because they're on a tight schedule. And watching them, like the opening of episode 5 is really cool because it's them on the run from guards. And I think it also just, it's a very brief thing, but you do kind of see how good they are at being stealthy and evading capture, even though there's like guards, it
Yeah.
seems, every corner they turn and all of that.
Yep.
It's also just really interesting that, like, I mean, I would argue that maybe those particular guards are not the best at their job
Yeah.
because they weren't even like properly hiding. They were just like hiding around corners and stuff, and these guards just couldn't catch them. But that might also just be, again, because Vax and Vex are so good at what they do, and they've been on the run for a long time.
They've
But
been
the
on, yeah,
opening,
yes.
yeah, the opening of episode 5 is really cool because we get to see them sneak into Gilmore's, and I just love that they managed to like sneak Keyleth with them, and obviously because she's not in her normal form, nobody notices, but they're able to sneak into Gilmore's. They do get caught, which I think Gilmore is very entertained by. But he kind of, is able to give them some advice about fighting the Briarwoods. And so he does say,
Yeah.
like, holy water is great. And Vex is like, we'll take all the holy water you've got. And he's like, you're looking at it, and it's just this one tiny vial
Yep, it
of
is.
holy water. And he also mentions direct sunlight as being a good sort of deterrent,
Counter.
or I guess, against a vampire. But unfortunately, I think, like Vax says, knowing the Briarwoods, it's probably going to be very hard to come by because
They're not
I
gonna make
also,
it
I
that
mean,
simple for them, really.
right. And also, I mean, the way it's described, like, they would need a ridiculous amount of light, and it's
Oh,
almost
yeah.
certain that whatever the Briarwoods are doing, it's probably going to be, or like maybe that, like, Vox Machina doesn't know this, but I think as viewers, you can kind of just get the sense, just based off of it, every time you've seen the Briarwoods, like, it's been dark, like the colors are all like darker and stuff, but
Muted.
like, yeah, there's not going to be a lot of light involved in whatever they're doing. And also, just like, they are vampires, though, or, well, Silas is, so he's not going to be around a ton of light. Not like the amount of light that they would need to kill him, he wouldn't be around, but he can exist in regular lighting and stuff without an issue, so.
I agree, but I think I'm sorry, I don't think we mentioned that Pike basically decides to go on her own journey to reestablish her connection to the Everlight. This is important because there's a very sweet scene between Grog and Pike at this moment where it's like Grog is just like, what if I need you? And it's just very sweet. Grog is wholesome, okay? For all his craziness, Grog is really wholesome. That's all I can say
He
about
is,
that.
yeah. It's a very touching scene, and I think also, like, it's I think something that comes into play like later on in the season,
Oh
that
God, yes.
Pike is kind of like, she steps away from the main group a little bit for a little bit, just to kind of go on her own journey,
Yes.
which is obviously very important to her, but also like that her like kind of goodbye with Grog was really wholesome. But then also what she tells Keyleth, like, you're their light now, that I thought was also just really sweet. And
Yes.
it was kind of
It
like,
was
I
very
think
sweet. Yeah.
it was also just, I think, a way to kind of remind her that, like, she just needs to, I think, believe in herself a little bit more, which is,
Yes.
of course, way easier said than done. It's not always the easiest, especially if you've kind of gotten used to doubting yourself, or if you've kind of fallen into that habit of being like, well, can I do this? I don't really know. And like second guessing yourself and just being generally, like, I guess, a little scared to tap into certain sides of yourself. But I think the nice thing is, with having a group this large, even if one person is feeling particularly down on themselves, or if they're like not confident, for all their ragging and teasing and whatnot, I think at the end of the day, they do care about each other,
They care
and
about each
they
other
all,
a lot, yes.
and like, it's, there's all of them there to kind of lift up maybe the one or two people who are kind of just like not fully trusting of themselves and all of that. And so I think you really see that in episode 5, where later on, anyway, there's like this really sweet moment between Vax and Keyleth where he's kind of like, I think not so much, I guess, encouraging her, but it is encouragement in its own way. And he like tells her like, don't listen to other people, like I believe in you. And
oh wait, you forgot the best part of that, but okay. We'll get to it.
This is jumping ahead a little bit.
I know, because they're idiots of the best kind and I hate them for it. Speaking of idiots, I want to talk about, because once they get stuff from Gilmore, they are on their way to Whitestone, and Percy really and Vex have a moment. Okay, they have a moment, and that kind of reminds me of another pairing that would perfectly fit into this stupid dynamic, right? Because like, Percy, Vex is just like looking at Percy. Okay, and she'll never admit it. She has a thing for Percy, but this time she'll never admit it because they're idiots and it's stupid. Okay, but let's start with that. So basically, Percy's just like, please stop that. I need to concentrate. Yeah, what on what? Your bitch face? My bitch face? Yeah, it's so funny. And they keep and she's basically like, you're going home. You should be happy. Like, this isn't a homecoming. I'm going back to the necromantic idiots who killed my family. Like, and for the record, I have a magnificent bitch face. Years of practice. Like, yes. Yes, Percy.
Yeah, no, that conversation was really entertaining, just given how I think somber the episode became.
Oh,
like
God,
it starts
yeah.
off kind of like upbeat and like more
yeah.
lighthearted, especially while they're in Gilmore's shop, because like that conversation, just first of all, Gilmore himself is like a delight anytime
he's
on
hilarious
screen.
Oh my God, especially his banter with Vax. Oh my God.
Yeah, and even like not even just his banter with Vax, but just him like observing things. Like there's that really cute scene where like Keyleth gets her like finger stuck in like the little finger trap thing, and Vax is like going over to help her, and then he's like staring at her for like a beat too long, and Gilmore picks up on it and he's like, "Oh, speaking of secrets." So like stuff like that. It was just such a delight to see him brought to life, because obviously, like even in the streams, like anytime he's mentioned, whether it's in campaign one or even like Exandria Unlimited, when he pops up, just watching him interact with any of the main characters was just such a treat.
He's
and it
a
was
character.
So much fun.
He's a character.
He is. So like seeing him on the screen was great, and I loved it. But I mean, like that part of episode 5 starts off fairly light, and then as they travel away from Whitestone and get further and further away, it like the mood, I think, generally tends to get a little bit more somber, especially once you get like key pieces of information. Like there's that bit where Scanlan is reading through Delilah's book, and they discover that she has some interest, and I think that's kind of putting it lightly, but she has some interest in ziggurats, which are structures that were used to like contact gods, basically.
Yep.
And that's a big deal, because in this world there's some good gods, I guess you could say, and then some not so good ones. And just given Delilah's general vibe, you know, if she's trying to reach out to any superpowered being, whether they're a god or not, it's probably not to do something great. So yeah, I mean, it's just like I think the tone of the episode shifts fairly quickly, and so that conversation with Percy and Vex is like, well, the tone is still a little bit light, but I think that's also when you get that line from Percy about how it's not like a homecoming, and he's going back to topple the necromantic overlords, or whatever you want to call the Briarwoods that took over his essentially his, like, I guess I don't want to say kingdom, but like his city. It's a big deal for him, and it's not, I think, as lighthearted as maybe the rest of the group would like it to be. So I think like that, like I don't know how to describe it and if it makes any sense, but watching the series, I thought it was so cool and clever how they're able to fit so much into an episode without it feeling overwhelming. Because like the tonal shifts is like one thing that I always marveled at, just because it was like there's a lot going on. And again, campaign one is like, I don't know the actual number of episodes, but it's, I want to say it's like over 120 episodes worth of content.
And that's a
again,
lot of content. Yeah.
Each episode is several hours long. And so season one is not pulling from all of campaign one. It's just focusing on the Briarwood arc, which is like a specific subset of episodes of the campaign, but it's still, you know, hundreds of hours of content. And obviously, even otherwise, the show is condensed. So they would have to pick and choose what they're going to put in the show.
Right. Without losing the essence. Yeah. Oh my God. Right. Absolutely.
So, like, I always just marveled at how, like, well the show was able to deal with everything and, like, have everything presented in a way where it doesn't feel overwhelming. And even people like us who are kind of
new to this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't feel overwhelmed, and I don't think you did either. And it was just.
It was
from start to finish. It was a ride, but it was so much fun to, like, watch and to see things like happen and to see how the story progressed, even though we may not have known everything from the campaign.
No, that's what I really like about this, because they're trying to build something from already existing source material. And the source material is, like, huge, right? And for them to be able to basically build this without, say, you know, losing the essence of the story and without making newcomers feel lost, I commend them for that. I really do. I think that was a feat, and they accomplished that really well, because now I'm hooked into it and I want to see what happens in season three. Basically, that's the thing at this point.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's the cool thing, that, like, there's so much content, like you said, but you still, I feel like you don't drown in it, and I think throughout it all, I mean, obviously, can't speak for other people, because everybody has a different, I think, connection to anything they watch or read whatever, but I think for us, it's like, even though we might not have seen the original stream, just watching this, it was so easy to care about the characters, so easy to kind of fall in love with them and be moved by them and, like, what they wanted to do and all of that. So I think, like you said, I mean, it was a feat, but they pulled it off, and I will never stop, like, marveling at how they were able to fit so much into what's essentially a very short, like, runtime.
Oh, and God. Not yeah, have it so very true.
Or, like, just have viewers just inundated with information. It felt like, to me at least, like, even knowing what very little I knew of campaign one, which is, like, honestly the bare minimum, I never felt lost, or I was never like, well, why is this happening, why are they doing this now? So that part was really cool to see.
Yep, absolutely. But I also want to talk about the whole situation with when they do get to Whitestone and what is happening at Whitestone, because it's a lot to take in. Right, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, one, it, like, that transition to when they get into Whitestone is really something, because the last bit of episode 5 is just, like, Percy being asked, well, what's Whitestone like, and he's describing it as, like, this beautiful, gorgeous place, and then it's like this camera, whatever you want to call it, cuts to Whitestone now under the Briarwoods, and it's just like it is miserable there, like the Briarwoods have just
I did the same thing. I'm sorry. It happened. I'm sorry.
It does happen. I think I just got lost in, like, my head for a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Briarwoods have just completely transformed it, and
the sun tree is just gone now.
That in itself is, like, a huge deal, because, like, the Sun Tree is very important to Whitestone and its people, because not just because of what it is actually doing, but what it represents. And then for them, for Vox Machina to go in and then just see it in the state it's in is, like, a big deal. But not only that, the Briarwoods, or more specifically, I guess, Delilah has, in cold blood, just killed a bunch of people and dressed them up to look like Vox Machina. And I think the real thing about that is there's a little girl you see at the end of episode, or the middle of episode 5, really, that like, this group of people just invited to the Briarwoods castle, which is really Percy's castle, I guess, for dinner. And the next time you see them, all those people are dead, and they're hung from the Sun Tree, and they're dressed to look like Vox Machina, including the little girl who was killed just so that Delilah could dress her up as Pike, which is, like, I mean, that's dark.
That's
I don't know how to
cruel.
get it is cruel. It's very creepy. And I think both Delilah and Silas are very sadistic. But I mean, I think part of also can't talk. Part of what makes them really great at like villains is not just their behavior, but like the voice acting, because Gray DeLeo does
Oh
such
my
an
God,
amazing job.
that
And
woman,
then
I she's
And then Matt is just like he's everybody in the background. And so him as Silas is like between the two of them, it's like the creepiness factor is there. Like they are intimidating villains. And from their introduction to the end of season one, I don't think they ever toned down the intimidation. Like you never get the sense that like, oh, okay, Vox Machina might have the upper hand here. It seems like it's more or less like a kind of even playing field in that sometimes it seems like the Briarwoods are pulling ahead and other times it seems like Vox Machina is pulling ahead. And then by the end of season one, it's like, well, who's gonna win this like fight between them? It's anybody's guess. So, yeah, between Matt and Gray DeLeo, they just did such an amazing job voicing the Briarwoods
Oh,
that
of
like
course.
they come across as, I think, intimidating as they were meant to be.
Which is great. Yeah, again, props to Gray and Matt, man. Like, Gray, I can't say enough stuff about Gray because that woman is a legend in the field of voice acting, right? She's, if you guys have watched any animated show, chances are this woman has voiced a character in it. That's how cool she is, right? She's done, her work is like, I can't even say it. It's great. And then Matt is just Matt, that's all I can say. He does a great job of everything. It's funny to
Know.
me,
I
but
mean, I think like that's the really nice thing about having a cast of voice actors on a like campaign like this, or I mean, even like not just the show, but even in the actual streams, like they're all professional voice actors, so they're all very good at what they do. But like, I don't know, there's something different about watching like that sort of role playing versus just like random people just sitting around in their house, which not to say that random people sitting around in their house and like broadcasting their games and their stories is bad or anything, but I mean these guys are professional voice actors.
hello.
They're very good at what they do, and it just it's on another level. So like getting to see them in the show and getting to see them kind of like I think it was nice to see them, I guess, have the same amount of enthusiasm and care for the characters that they did in the actual stream, and to like to see that now in the show is really cool. So if it's not already obvious, I just love the show to pieces, and
It's
clearly I can't
great.
talk because every
No,
time I open
but
my mouth about it, I'm like words are a mess, but
no, but I definitely agree because there's so much going on in this that it's a lot. I also want to talk about how Delilah finally gets her book back because that is also a pretty badass fight. And this is the scene you were talking about where Vax is like, I believe in you. So I want to talk about that too, because there's a lot going on.
yeah, I mean, well, this is kind of jumping back a bit, but Delilah getting the book back happens in episode 5. And in between, before the crew gets to Whitestone, but that is also just a really crazy fight. And I don't know, there's just so many things about it, like Vex just shooting a zombie dog in the butt. I don't know, there was just something about that that was like maybe that I thought it was hilarious. But I'm sure that
What about the
zombie dog
Keyleth
should not be
body
fed.
slam?
That's what I
I'll
was
talk
going to
about
say next.
that.
I mean, the thing that I never understood, or well, not so much I didn't understand, but I was curious about because I missed it the first time I watched the show. But when I went back and I rewatched it, when she body checks that monster, its eyes glow green. So I'm like, was she controlling it? Can she control it? Because that would be super
That
like
would be
cool.
interesting.
And yeah, I think it would have been really funny to see if they had more time to focus on that scene, to see her controlling like one of those zombie wolf dog thingies and just have it go to town on the other two. But yeah, I mean, there was something just really interesting about that fight because like they took all this trouble to show Vax and Vex and Keyleth getting their supplies, and then within like 2 seconds, their supplies are all gone. They have like nothing beyond whatever they stuffed into their pockets. And I think you really kind of feel for Percy, especially because he's like at the end of that whole encounter, he's like, they got what they wanted again. And it's like, oh yeah, that's rough. And like, I think as viewers, you really sympathize with him because you know his backstory at this point, you know what the Briarwoods have done. And then
Yeah, you
going
get
into
bits and
it.
pieces of it on this.
And then, yeah, I think by the time you get into episode six and you see like the atrocities that Delilah has committed, especially with like stringing up those people in the Sundry, I think by then, as viewers, we're all like, yeah, no, we absolutely understand why Percy is the way he is. And it makes sense that he reacted so viscerally in episode three, the
Oh
first time
God,
he
yeah.
saw the Briarwoods, and also his like encounter with their steward and the way he just treated them. Like, it was horrifying to watch because I think we were kind of, as viewers, we were kind of in the same boat as like the rest of Vox Machina. Like, it just seems like this is a random guy who doesn't know anything, and Percy's like tearing him to pieces, literally. But for Percy, it's like this
Personal.
person was complicit. Yeah, because it's, yeah, he has a personal vendetta against the Briarwoods. And again, it's really hard to blame him. So, yeah, but there is that really cute scene, like you mentioned, episode five, where after the whole encounter and Delilah managing to get her book back, the group is kind of camping out. And then there's like that slightly humorous moment where Scanlan has the scroll he got from Brimside's cave, and he's like figuring out what it does. And then Keyleth is hatching back up. And that's the first, I think the first time in the show he called her Kiki, which I just thought was like, because I mean, I knew a
Don't
little
hurt
bit
me.
about their dynamic. Yeah, I knew a little bit about their dynamic from the stream, but seeing it in the show was like, thanks, Liam and Marisha. I didn't need this again, but
No
I
one
absolutely
needed
love
it.
it, so give me more. But yeah, that moment was really cute and really sweet. And again, I think like for all its levity, I guess, it was nice to see that like anytime one person is feeling particularly down, again, the rest of the group might tease them, they might be a little bit hard on them at times, but at the end of the day, they are still a friend group, and
They
they
are.
care about each other, even if they get into fights or they don't always see eye to eye or they don't always agree on things. So like that was nice to see. But also, I think for Vax, it was also more that he also genuinely cared about Keyleth and was, he liked her. And so part of it was just him saying that, I think, out of being a good friend, as the rest of the
Friend.
group was. But then another part was like, I mean, yeah, a part of it was that, but the other part was also, again, he genuinely liked her. So I think any chance to kind of hint at his feelings, maybe he would have taken.
He would have taken it. That's true. He is that idiot. That's true.
We say that
But
a lot, but we mean it in the best way. They're all
yeah.
lovable idiots.
See, we call them idiots out of love, guys. That's the only thing we can say about that. Okay? Yeah. So this is again, and Vex doesn't exist. I want to talk about how this affects Vex, because Vex is also like, careful, brother. That vine has thorns. And then Vax is just like, you're imagining things. It's okay. Don't worry about it. But it's that dynamic is, I think you talked about this off recording a lot, because that's like, what were you doing with Percy like 5 minutes ago?
Yeah,
Okay.
I
Like,
mean, I know, I think Vex means well, but I think for her and Vax, it's really just been them for so long because they lost their mother, and their father is a piece of work, and that's putting it nicely. And it was just them, and it was like, I think their dynamic became us against the world, and I think it kind of remained that way even into their tenure, if you want to call it that, with Vox Machina. And I think now she's kind of seeing that, like, okay, Vax is a little bit more attentive to other people. And I don't think she has an issue with him being attentive to Keyleth or like being into her, but I think she is wondering, like,
What does that,
I
where
mean,
does that leave me in a weird way?
I think she's questioning their dynamic without, I guess, the level of doubt that you would expect, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't think she doubts that Vax would ever pause, or I guess that he would ever, like,
No, I don't
I
think
guess,
she doubts
have
that
somebody that
Vax
weren't.
would. Yeah. I know what you mean.
It's kind of, I mean, I don't know if I'm explaining it well. I don't think I am, but it's, I don't think she doubts her level of importance to Vax would ever
No,
diminish or
no, no,
decrease or whatever. But I think
no.
she's concerned that, it is that thing of, well, Vax seems super into Keyleth. She's kind of just not really, she's not really leading him on, but she's not discouraging him
Responding
either.
either, yeah.
Yeah, so I think she's just concerned that whatever Vax might be doing might potentially hurt him just as much. And also I think there is, I think in the beginning at least, there's a little bit of I don't want to say animosity, but I think, because I feel like Vax and Keyleth are
Yeah.
just two very different characters, just in terms of the
Yes.
way they view themselves. Vex is
Yes.
super confident. She knows what she's capable of. And you don't really see her doubting herself too much. Whereas Keyleth is like the complete opposite. Like she's super powerful, but like the whole time, it's like she kind of refrains from doing things unless people tell her, or at least in the beginning, that's really like the vibe that you get from her. And then as the series progresses, it's like, you do see her slowly gain a little bit more confidence throughout the rest of the show. But I mean, even in like the early episodes, she, you can see the extent of some of her abilities, just manipulating,
The
nature and the
elements.
elements and stuff like that. But you don't really see her do it a ton. And when she does it, she's super powerful. Like in episode 4, when she just bathes the whole room in light and it's bright enough to stop the entire horde of creepy shades that Delilah sent after them. Or even when they were fighting Grimmsnithe and she managed to make a mini storm and hit him with lightning. It's like she's clearly capable. It's just I
She
think
is.
she
She's.
hasn't used her abilities as much, or she's holding back a little bit because of maybe how she feels. So it's that part was really interesting to see, just because again, they just feel like two different, they are two different people in terms of how they view themselves and their confidence in themselves. So I think that for Vex at least, it was kind of like, I think
I
she was
mean,
wondering what Vax was doing going after Keyleth to a certain extent. I don't know.
no, I agree. They are very different characters, and that kind of changes in a little bit. And I want to, and we're jumping ahead, really. But at this point, basically, what they have to do is meet the one person who can basically get them close enough to, defeat the Briarwoods, basically. So that's what they're looking at. And that's kind of an interesting turning point in this, because that's where they have to deal with this. And that's when they meet Yennen. Oh, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, going into Whitestone, which is the bulk of episode 6, really, it's
Getting into
Vox
it,
Machina, yeah, just getting to Whitestone and then figuring out what the hell is going on. It's, I mean, I think it's definitely radically different from when Percy was last there. Obviously, when he was last there, the Briarwoods had just kind of ousted his family, and they had just started their very long reign of atrocities, and they had started killing his siblings and his parents and all of that. So when he left it was very different. But to come back now and to see it in the state it's in, it's like the city is in shambles. The people are in hiding. There's like giants or half giants roaming the streets, and like the Briarwoods cronies have like effectively just taken control of the city, and they're being given fancy houses and all these creepy abilities to basically just control the population and bend them to their will, essentially. So it's a far cry from what Percy initially left. And I think he's also just really moved and upset by the state it's in. So seeing
Yeah,
him go
because
through
it's his
that was
home.
a thing. Yeah, it's his home, and he left because he had no choice, and now he's back, and I think he really wants to do something to help the people and to reclaim the city, but it's in a really bad state. And so Yennen is the only person, according to him, who can get them on the right track, but they don't know where she is, or at least not at first. And I mean, he even asked is she still alive, or something to that effect. And it's that's the state that they've come back to. It's they don't even know. He hasn't had any contact with anybody there for who knows how
Years.
long. Yeah. So he doesn't know who's alive, who's dead.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't even know if like Yennen herself is alive. But thankfully, it's like one tiny piece of good news amidst
That
a
she
sea
is, yeah.
of bad news. Yeah. That she's alive, and not only is she alive, but there's a resistance
That
and they're
she's
doing the
helping with, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. And like the resistance is trying their best to fight back against the Briarwoods and free Whitestone, but it's a tall order.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's also talk about I think Archie, right? He's the one leading the rebellion. Let's talk about that because I think most of this episode they try to spend getting him back or rescuing him, right? Let's talk about
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's again like there's a lot going on in the show that happens very quickly, but like it never feels super overwhelming. It never feels like it doesn't make sense for them to go from one episode to the next. Like their actions, it never seems like that their actions just don't add up logically or whatever. So even this, like introducing Archie, who I think was, if I remember correctly, I believe he was like a guest character, or like there was somebody who played him in the stream, but I could be wrong. I have, again, I haven't actually seen the stream, so I apologize if I've misremembered or misspoke on anything regarding that. But seeing him in the show is really interesting because he and Percy have a connection. He's I guess you could say, I guess it would be fair to say he's Percy's oldest friend because they grew up together, and I think Archie was like the son of the kitchen cook or something like that,
They
and
got
he
into
and
a lot of
Percy,
trouble together, like
they got into like hijinks together, and the last time Percy would have seen him presumably would have been right before he had to flee Whitestone. And again, like we mentioned, since his fleeing Whitestone, he hasn't really had contact with the people there, so he has no idea what state the people are in, especially the people he knows personally. So I think for him, hearing that Archie was alive was a really big shock. And so episode six, like part of it is just them trying to figure out ways to get Archie. And the few bits you see of Archie before you, like before he's able to link up with Percy, he's in a pretty rough
He's
shape.
in pretty rough
He's
shape, yeah. Oh my God,
Being
yes.
held by Stonefell, who's like, I
One
don't
of the
even know what you call him.
Briarwoods henchmen. That's what I can call him at this point.
I mean, no, I think that's fair. I was like, I don't even know if he's so much a henchman or just like somebody who's sadistic enough that like the Briarwoods were like, here's the person you can break, have at it. And he was just like, oh, goody, because the
One more
Briarwoods
person to
cronies are
break for me.
all,
What?
Yeah, no, that's kind of, I think, their outlook. I mean, I would say all of the Briarwoods cronies are probably as sadistic as the Briarwoods. So that bit, I'm sure if the Briarwoods were like, here's a person for you to break, I'm sure their response would be like laughter or glee or something equally inappropriate. But again, all of the Briarwoods cronies are just really sadistic people. And so when they attempt to rescue Archie, they're really going up against Kyrian Stonefell, who's like the first person that Percy's encountered on his very long hit list of people to
Which we will talk about
kill.
more in the next. There's more to that.
There definitely is. But that like whole encounter with them trying to free Archie is equally insane just in terms of like what happens, and then also funny because like there's some moments where it's like there's the bit where initially like the rebels and then Vex, Keyleth, and Percy are going through the prison trying to get to Archie, and then meanwhile, sorry, not Percy, because Percy's on, he's backdoor, the frog. God, Vex and Keyleth are like going through the prisons trying to like find out where Archie is, and then
Yep.
Percy, Vax, and Scanlan are trying to infiltrate the same building from the back door.
Yep.
And then midway through, they all link up. And there's that really funny exchange between Vax and Vex where they're like, "What's this crowd? Picked it up along the way." And then when he passes, Vex gets a whiff and she's like, "Why are you covered in piss?" And he's like, "Picked it up along the way."
Yeah.
Like that was really funny. Or like the bit where when they finally do get caught by the guards, there's a bit where Scanlan is like, he's trapped and Stonefell is ordering Scanlan to be killed. But because I guess the guards don't know, and also I guess because Scanlan is Scanlan, he's able to trick them and have like another version of himself pop up and be
Yeah.
like, "Hey, what's a guy gotta do to get action around here?" And
Yeah.
then it turns out that the guards, like, they're confused at first. They're like, "We have no idea what's going on," but they
Yep.
had that the real Scanlan and they just didn't know. Like stuff like that was really funny. But then there's
It
also
was.
like really dark moments in between where like you see some of the rebels get struck down in pretty brutal ways
Oh
and
God,
things like that. So
yeah.
the fight scenes are always really interesting because you can almost always be guaranteed of like one or two moments of like levity or something really humorous happening, but then immediately like the tone just
Something
goes back to
dark.
like,
Yeah, oh
yeah,
my
this is
God.
like dark and scary for the people, maybe not for the viewers so much, but like for the characters, I would imagine if they could like break the fourth wall, I'm sure they would say like, this is crazy.
Yep.
And that's putting it very lightly.
Very lightly. I absolutely agree. Oh my God. But that I the last thing I want to talk about is the implications of what Archie tells Percy in at the end, because Percy's like doing this out of the responsibility of being the sole Darolo left alive. But that's when Archie's like, "No, you're not. Cassandra's still alive." And that is kind of a shocker. What did you think of that?
It's a huge way to end the series. I mean, well, not the series, but the episode rather, and
Yeah.
like their first sort of foray into Whitestone. And again, it's a cliffhanger, like for that episode anyway. So
Yep.
it's a big deal. And I think for Percy too, he spent so long, I think, grieving his family and kind of attempting and struggling to come
To
to terms with
avenge, yeah.
like, well, not just his vengeance, but I think he's been struggling to accept their death and like,
Yep.
you know, like I think that he's going through a lot of things, and I think, as other people have put it, he's a good case in like PTSD.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, like I think Percy's just been struggling to kind of accept that his family died, and he's been really struggling to, I think, work through his grief and kind of process his emotions in like a healthier way, I think. And so I think by the time we get to this point at the end of episode 6, where Archie reveals that he's not the last Darolo alive and that his sister Cassandra still lives, I think for him it's a huge kind of shock because the last, I guess, or maybe not the last, but I think one of like the very like poignant memories he has maybe is that it
Yeah.
was him running away, and he has, I think, or I'm sure it would have been replaying in his mind, like that image of her getting struck down, and then he just had like he had no choice. It was like in a life or death situation like that. He couldn't go back and check, and he just left. He ran, and I think he, because I mean also, it's hard to blame him for doing that because it's like for somebody to take that many arrows and then survive, you would think it would be impossible. So I think for him, he thought like, I'm sure in the moment he thought like, this is it, like she's gone, I can't do anything for her, and if
Yeah.
I want to, the best thing I can do is run away so I can live and then I can come back and, you know, exact my vengeance and all of that. But to find out now that she's alive and she's been alive for all this time, I'm sure
And
there's a lot
unfortunately, with the Briarwoods, not to discount that, because that's got to be a curveball at this point, but yeah,
Yeah, I'm
for
sure it
sure.
was like a huge blow to him on multiple levels because it's, I'm sure part of it is like the guilt of realizing that she was
He
alive
left
and
her
that he was alive.
behind. Yeah.
Right. And then the other thing is like you said, now that she it's been brought to light that she's alive, but not only is she alive, she's under the Briarwoods' control. Like that's a huge revelation
Oh God, yeah.
too. So, There's a lot, and I think for him, unfortunately, there's a lot he's like he has to work through in that one episode alone, like on top of everything else he's been dealing with, and like on top of all the things he's been trying to, I think, process and come to terms with since he initially left Whitestone. I think this is just like extra stuff that he has to now deal with and like come to terms with, and it's definitely tough. I think, like, again, like other people have said, I think Percy's a very good case of like he showed like I think how PTSD can affect people, because he went through a lot of trauma in just
Yeah, he
leaving
did.
Whitestone and like with the Briarwoods, and I think it can sometimes be messy, and I think the show does a good job of showing that like as much as he tries to be, I think, good and fair and decent in most aspects of his life, when it comes to the Briarwoods, he's like a completely different person, and there is a reason for that beyond just his desire for vengeance. But I think the show does a really good job of showing that like PTSD can affect people differently, and for some
How they
people, like
deal
it
with
can,
it. Yeah.
yeah, and it can take like even, a really good guy like Percy, who's usually like I would say he's pretty level-headed for most of the show when they're not directly dealing with the Briarwoods and
Yeah,
stuff.
no,
But
you're
like,
right.
as soon as
He's
he's within like striking distance of somebody connected to the Briarwoods or the Briarwoods themselves, he's like he transforms, and it's like for him the like it things just like the stakes are different. His like
It's
decisions
different, yeah.
have like different outcomes for him, and
Yep.
yeah, it's just very different when he's in
And
close
we'll get
proximity
to
to
that
anybody on his
because
blanket
there
list.
could be multiple reasons
But
for this, but also there's multiple reasons for this, yes, but I really like that you brought this up because it's such a different side of Percy because like you said, he's usually level-headed and he's not rash, but when he sees the Briarwoods and when he sees anyone who wronged him and his family, it like you said, he's a completely different person. And that's a sight. And
yeah,
we'll get more of
it's
that. We'll get more of that throughout the season. And with that, we are going to end this episode. We talked about episode 3, 4, and 6. No, 4, 5, and 6, basically. Sorry, my bad. I can't talk. 4, 5, and 6 of season one of Vox Machina. For anyone who is still with us, listening to us nerd out about this, thank you. We really appreciate you. We cannot say that enough. And we will definitely be back next week with the next 3 episodes of season one of The Legend of Vox Machina. Thank you, guys. And we really appreciate you. Have a good one.
thank you. As always, our lovely theme song is Water Lily by the 126ers. The Nerdy Podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and you can follow us online at nerdy-podcasts.tumblr.com or at nerdypodcasts.wordpress.com.